listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
I reminisce for a spell, or should I say think back to 22 years ago when I kept it on track. The birth of a child on the 8th of October, a toast, but my granddaddy came sober. Counting all the fingers and the toes, now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows. Huh, 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beatings because the girl loved drama. In single parenthood, there I stood. By the time she was 21, had another one. This one's a girl. Let's name a Pam. Same father as the first, but you don't give a damn. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
We're in the house on a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. For those that were expecting Janelle James, she'll be here tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So
tomorrow
we you know, got a little dates confused a little bit, but we'll be back. We'll have her in here tomorrow, and that'll be great.
Baby,
and
refresh.
And I'm gonna refresh real quick since everybody's clearly having issues with my sound. Is that what it was? It was. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I think when I play music and then I switch to just the mics.
Okay.
Some reason it sounds weird. I don't know. Just give it a second.
No problem.
For me to get back on screen. There we go. So yeah, we'll definitely make sure we do that, guys. We'll have Janelle on tomorrow. The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
An unofficial sport.
It's bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. Today marks day 566, I believe, that Bobby Schmurder's been locked up in jail with $2 million bail. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know when he's coming out, guys. Your guess is as good as mine.
All right.
But it's looking like it's going to definitely be through the summer. So the countdown or count up.
Another summer.
Oh, 467. Okay, so it's a 567. So it'll actually, the count up will continue to go
up.
You know, I don't know.
Ain't no count down. It's count up.
All right. Of course, the Blackout Tips you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and all kinds of places, RSS Radio. Mm-hmm. Just search the Blackout Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews, and we'll read them on the air when it comes to Saturday morning. We'll do our feedback show, and we'll read your reviews live on the air. If you want to catch the show live, go to crowdcast.io and subscribe to us, man. Follow us on social media and stuff, and you can already see when we go live, and you can click on that. And on Crowdcast, it allows you to follow us, it allows you to subscribe to events, so that you get an email whenever we're about to go live or when we do go live. So these are all things that help out when it comes to keeping up with the show. You know, we have a live crowd in here tonight. You know, I already got, looks like 20-30 people in here. So woo-hoo! You know, well, let's try to keep it going, guys. All right, let's get into some show stuff here, guys. I was watching Independence Day last night, the original. We already watched the new one, Independence Day Resurgence.
This is bad.
Yeah, and I already as Karen called it last night, Insurgents.
I called it that with everything but what it was.
Yeah, so but yeah, I was watching the original, and I gotta say, the real hero of that movie, and I don't think enough people give her credit, is Vivica Fox. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was a stripper that evacuated, you know, LA or whatever before it got blown up, saved a dog, saved her son, and then saved the president's wife's life. And then, Will Smith got in a helicopter, went to go find his black queen, get you a man that can do both.
Yes,
in the middle of the movie, I forgot about that part. He just stole a helicopter. Mm-hmm. On a hunch and went and found his woman, and then after all that, before he went off on his last dangerous mission to save the world, she got married to him. So her son and her got that good government insurance, man. That's the real hero move, if you think about it.
Yep. And when we come back 20 years later, she's a goddamn doctor.
Yeah, like she's she was one of the strippers that was really in school, you know, like. Mm-hmm. She took full advantage of the government benefits that marrying a Marine Air Force pilot would grant a woman. So you know, kudos to her. Mm-hmm. Not enough people talk about the complex moves she got to pull off there. I mean, if he had died during that space mission, which he was expected to do, she still would have had to come up, you know. So good for her, man. People need to give her a little more props when y'all go back and watch these movies. All right. All right, let's get into the news. All kinds of news continues to happen here. I guess the first news is the FBI finally released a statement on Hillary Clinton's emails.
What'd they say?
They will not be bringing a case against her.
No shit.
It said, careless but no reasonable prosecutor will bring such a case against Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. So, looks like she won.
I thought this was America, people. Yeah. Guilty until proven innocent, huh? That's how we working, huh? Okay. Before me, there was many.
After me, there will be none. I am the one.
Uh-huh. Okay. I see how we playing. Yeah, I get it down. Anxiously, the public can't wait. Niggas had to...
That's right.
Ah, you know she danced in there.
Hillary is scot-free. Y'all can be mad. Be mad if you want. They couldn't get her. Bernie was wrong.
Mm-mm.
Donald was wrong. I told you she untouchable, y'all. y'all thought y'all was gonna get on some emails. That's so cute. That is so cute. That is adorable. Y'all thought y'all was gonna get the boss of them all. They been on her ass for 20 something years.
Come on, dog.
Y'all thought y'all was gonna catch up with the Google Glassware? With the Gmail? With the Gmail, dog? For real? Y'all really believe, y'all hyped y'allself up to believe y'all could catch the Don of them all.
Come on.
On the motherfucking same way that dudes get caught cheating on Facebook. Y'all thought that was how y'all was gonna catch her
her down like that?
With the phone password? You thought she was gonna leave the tape in the VCR? That's how you thought? You thought she was gonna catch Hillary big dog Rodham Clinton?
Right, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Hell no. You're not catching the HRC like that. Y'all must be, boy, y'all cute. Y'all are cute, man. It's adorable. I told y'all a long time ago, this is not how it's going to happen. You catch Hillary and some shit, it's going to be, you're going to have to use, like, wires and shit. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's going to have to wear a wire.
Yeah, you're going to have to, like, wire down over top of her, hover or some shit. Invisible. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to use that spy shit to catch her ass.
Yeah, she testified before the FBI. I had an audio of her, of some of her testimony.
You're the one who's guilty. The lawmakers, the politicians, the Colombian drug lords, all you who lobby against making drugs legal, just like you did with alcohol during the prohibition, you're the one who's guilty. I mean, come on, let's kick the ballistics here. Ain't no Uzis made in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not one of us in here owns a poppy field.
Not one.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown.
It's bigger than Hillary Clinton.
This is the American way.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the court was enlightened by your geopolitical tirade, Mr. Brown. Unfortunately, society at large is not on trial here. You are, Mr. Brown. Were you or were you not head of the narcotics consortium, the murderously bloody CMB?
Yes.
I could not hear you. Would you please speak up, Mr. Brown?
Yes, I was a member. But I was forced into this way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look, I've been dealing drugs ever since I was 12 years old. See, I didn't have the chances that you have,
Miss Hawkins.
I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
Miss Hawkins. That's right. H-Dog not going down like that.
Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. You can charge her, but she's not guilty. Okay.
Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. I know they're so mad.
Oh, you know they're mad.
Republicans is hot. The FBI was like, man, look, it was like some emails that was like, had some classified information on her server. But nah, man, she just was trying to be private. She trusted Gmail more than she trusted the government.
Apparently so.
I mean, after the way that the government leaks came through, I mean, I don't blame her. If I would have seen Snowden, you know, putting everybody business in the streets, I'd be like, y'all niggas need to get on Gmail too.
Right. Shit, Gmail got better protection. Mm-hmm. And all jokes aside, who knows what she got on people, dog?
Mm-hmm.
She been in this game for a long time.
They found that there was no evidence that Clinton or her staff intentionally deleted emails to hide information from investigators. The FBI will be handing its findings over to the Department of Justice, which will make the final call on whether or not to press charges against Clinton. Mm-hmm. So she got him so far. One more step, and then it's on to the White House. Be bad. Speaking of government secrets, President Obama let it spill that his daughter Sasha may have a Twitter account.
Oh no, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Mm-hmm. He accidentally sent Twitter into a frenzy when he disclosed that his teenage daughter Sasha tweets. Obama was poking fun at Donald Trump during a rally for Hillary Clinton in Charlotte, North Carolina on Tuesday when he said that tweeting doesn't make it someone prepared to be president. Remarking on the billionaire businessman's prolific use of the social media platform, Obama said everybody can tweet, but nobody actually knows what it takes to do the job until you sat behind the desk. I mean, Sasha tweets, but she doesn't think that she thereby should be sitting behind the desk.
Oh, Lord, you're going to have people harass your baby.
Right? I hope it works out for you. I wonder if she's like, I'm so embarrassed.
She's a child, so you know she is.
Of course, she's 15 and her older sister Malia aren't known to have public social media profiles, and their parents have tried to protect their privacy. The White House declined to answer any questions about the matter, but Obama's offhand comment led to Sasha Obama quickly trending on Twitter as users tried to track down her account. A Twitter account under the name @SashaObama has been suspended as of Tuesday evening. But internet sleuths pounced on the potential clues and tweets written by random users who have claimed to be related to the president in the past in their quest to figure out Sasha's secret handle.
I guarantee you she wouldn't tell y'all.
Happy B-Day to my sister Malia Obama. Makes sense that our dad is the president and she was born on the 4th of July, aka USA's Independence Day, said a user with the handle @DeniseBrickinko. Tweeted last year. Today she was bombarded with comments asking if she was actually Sasha. Her reply suggested she is not.
Of course.
No
shit. If I'm the president's daughter and I'm using the social media platform, you would not know who
They were searching tweets. My dad at POTUS is exposing the U.S. prison industrial complex and I'm here for it. Come on.
Of course,
y'all.
That's not her.
Obama is my dad. I have 2 t-shirts with his face on it. Happy Father's Day to my dad. I love you so much, @POTUS, and just a bunch of pictures of Barack Obama. Why is everyone asking me if I'm Sasha Obama? I wish I was her, she wrote, but plenty of others have also claimed to be his children, and they went through the other tweets. Here's, I guess, the clip of him on the campaign trail, which was in today in our town.
It means so much to me.
Oops. What's on the volume? I don't know. Damn it!
He knows a thing or two about winning elections. Take it from me. Now, some of you might remember that he and I competed against each other as hard as we could back in 2008. But when it was over, I was proud to endorse him and campaign for him.
But I'm here today because I believe in Hillary Clinton. And I want you to help elect her to be the next president of the United States of America. That's why I'm here. The bottom line is, she was a great Secretary of State. And by the way, that's not just my opinion. That was the view of the American people and pundits throughout the time that she was serving as Secretary of State. Before the whole political machinery got moving. You remember that? It wasn't that long ago. It's funny how that happens. Everybody thought she was doing a great job. That's because she did do a good job. But it's funny how the filter changes a little bit. Same person, done the same work, but you know, that filter is a powerful thing. So the bottom line is, I know Hillary can do the job. And that's why I am so proud, North Carolina, to endorse Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States.
Damn, he's so good, man. All the black people in the crowd was actually, like, you could hear people call and response like it was church. Mm-hmm. You saw that? She had the job. Yes, she did now. Mm-hmm. Don't Obama. Wow. Man, he is good. He's so good that Brian Williams called President Obama. He said, because he works for MSNBC now, which is so weird. Every time I see him on the news on MSNBC, I think to myself, like, is this real or is he fucking with me? I don't know. Like, y'all probably shouldn't have him reporting anything, because every time I'm like, so is this
a prank?
Someone gonna come out and tell us we prunked, you know?
How do I know it really is raining outside?
Right. Flight 72 crashed today. Did it?
Did it.
I was flying it. Oh, okay. All right. He's bullshitting. But apparently he was hit with the internet raft after calling Obama's speech a Richard Pryor delivery. Did you think that sounded like Richard Pryor to you, Karen? Mm-mm. No? You didn't pick any Richard up in there?
All us Negroes look alike, apparently.
apparently.
And it sounded like, too. There was no cussing. Mm-hmm. There was no motherfuckers.
Apparently
racial jokes.
What you guys just listened to was a Richard Pryor delivery.
There was no jokes. No jokes about him getting high, telling about how his kids were drowning.
Here's some Richard Pryor if you guys need to compare what it sounds like to what.
Good God. Boy, a lot of niggas here today. Some white folks too. Look at this. You motherfuckers come in a bunch, did you?
Stick with me. Don't worry about a thing. Just come on.
Shortage of white people lately. I ain't seen no white folks no more. Y'all stop fucking? White folks into yoga. You can't get no nut doing no yoga. You got to get the pussy. They stopped fucking because some rich white man told them. Said, look, come on, cut the crop. Jesus Christ, there's too many people on earth. I have no place to ride my horsey. There will be no shortage of niggas. Niggas is fucking.
So, yeah, I mean, can you tell the difference?
Could have fooled me. Mm-mm.
Yeah, he said, he called Obama's speech the Richard Pryor treatment. So that's
guess he thought I was gonna go well.
Yeah, that's fair.
The president was being urged by one member of the crowd to preach, and he seemingly tried to at one point, borrowing almost a Richard Pryor delivery to deliver the degree of his disgust and disdain for the other side. The comments clearly aimed at Donald Trump. At one point,
he said, "What black comedians do I know?" Went down his Rolodex.
Oh my God.
What's he gonna say next? Red Fox?
It was a Chris Rock delivery. It was very funny.
Was a Martin Lawrence delivery?
Mm-hmm. Just President Obama on stage being like, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. Oh my God, Hillary Clinton. No, Chris Rock gotta say everything three times. Hillary Clinton. You know, you gotta say it like six different ways. Look at the crowd. Hold that mic to the side.
Of course.
Hillary. Stomp his feet.
That's what make it great.
Boy, I tell you, white folks are mad about some Hillary Clinton. You're like, all right, Chris, do the joke. A barbecue grill broke free from a camper and it hit a car and killed a teenager passenger.
This grill was sentient.
Mm-hmm.
It broke free.
Yeah. According to the police, the grill was attached to a camper driven by Jason Mark of Farmington. They said the support beam connecting the smoker to the motor home broke, causing the grill to break free. It's on the highway. This gotta be just the worst nightmare.
Right.
Apparently, he went over a bump and it got loose from the camper, and then he hit another bump right after and it broke all the way free.
Okay.
It slammed into a car, killing the passenger.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. The grill came wobbly while going eastbound. Hit a bridge, at a bump near a bridge, swerved, and then it went airborne after hitting the second bump.
Holy
before
shit.
Becoming loose with the tow hitch and hitting a second car heading westbound. The driver of the car, so it hit a car going in the other direction.
Holy shit, so it stopped traffic. It basically in both directions.
Yeah, the driver of the car survived, but the passenger died. Yeah, it's unclear if charges or tickets will be issued. So no idea. That's just wild.
Right, it's like a freak accident.
Everybody, you know, traveling for 4th of July, they're probably on the highway, you're moving these grills and shit like that. You know, sometimes when I'm on the road, I think about that. Like, yo, what if that boat just came loose? You know, you just drive behind somebody with a trailer. What if the trailer just falls off somehow?
Yeah, I'm like that around the big old the tractor trailers, the real, real big ones.
Yeah.
I don't like them to be, like, around me in my vicinity, period. I either speed up or slow down because, like, hey, this tire is bigger than my whole fucking car. If it just has to pop, I'm in trouble. Nope.
Yeah, I've seen the tire part come off during the middle of them driving before. Like that, because truck tires, what they do is they have this tread on them and they peel basically so that they don't catch a flat or pop, you know, but they'll peel right off of it. And you'll see it on the highway sometimes. It's big. Yeah, I've seen tire.
And that's what scares me, because I've seen the aftermath, but I've never seen it actually pop.
Yeah, I've seen those before.
What it look like?
I mean, it's like a big ass piece of rubber flying down the fucking highway. You just hope it don't hit your car or whatever, but yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah, that could cause a wreck, right?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Does it like make a popping sound?
No, you just see a big ass piece of rubber flying off of a tire. It doesn't pop. It doesn't. Oh. It's on there because the tire won't pop, so that it won't just pop in the middle of the street. But yeah, the rubber chunks fly off all the time, and they can be really big, like, you know, big as a tractor truck. As big as a tractor truck trailer tire. Say that 5 times fast.
You can keep that.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad for this kid, man. He got hit right in the grill. All right. Let's see what else is happening. Speaking of dying on Independence Day, an Iowa woman was killed when a homemade cannon exploded.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Why you got a cannon? What's this, World War II? What's happening here?
Celebrating the 4th, apparently, I guess.
Oh, like she trying to shoot cannon. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, she got a homemade cannon in her yard. And they were celebrating in her backyard at a gathering Saturday, July 2nd. They decided to shoot the cannon. They loaded it and fired it. But when it went off, the rear portion of the barrel blew out, sending fragments where she was sitting, and one of the fragments got stuck in her head.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
See, for me, maybe just me, I'm not anti-fireworks or firecrackers or no shit like that, but you let the professionals do it. If them motherfuckers get their hands blown off, what the fuck am I doing out there with fucking fireworks? Like, I remember when I was young, people thought it was a joke, and I almost, like, And I'm not a fighter, but I almost had to brawl with some of my friends when I was younger because they came out with, like, I don't even like the fucking sparklers. They came out with, like, some hand fireworks and that set them up. I was like, motherfuckers, I would goddamn fight you. I don't want to lose a limb because y'all think this shit is fucking funny. Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird, too, because, you know, it's like taking fireworks to the next level with a cannon. Like, that's just... like, you made a cannon just for this moment. Like, you didn't test it. You have no idea. I mean, there's a reason that technology was left behind as we entered into the next century. Like, there's a reason we don't roll cannons out when it's time to go to war anymore. You know, just like, you just decided, like, I'm gonna build a cannon, like, you know, that's crazy. Oh, and imagine there's probably kids there.
Right, and watched this woman die, and she wasn't even participating.
Mm-hmm.
She was off to the side, going, look at these motherfuckers.
Well, I guess they was having a ball.
Apparently they was.
Cannonball.
Ha, ha, ha.
Mm-hmm. Another officer resigns after teenage prostitute names him in a sex scandal that cost Oakland 3 police chiefs in less than a month.
Do they just need to fire everybody, just restart the whole unit? Because every time you turn around, some new shit coming out. Ain't there the people that had three chiefs in 3 days or some crazy shit like that? Everybody got the job in 24 hours, they were quitting.
I literally just read Oakland, the scandal that cost Oakland 3 police chiefs in less than a month. So, yes. That was in the sentence that I read. But yeah, he's after being named by a teenage prostitute who claims that she slept with 32 police officers. Ricardo Perez has resigned. He is the sheriff's deputy. He became the latest to resign in the wake of the scandal, which previously cost Oakland 3 police chiefs in less than a month.
Now 4?
He's not a chief, he's just an officer.
Oh, he's a regular. Okay.
He's now under criminal investigation by the Oakland Police Department. Guap, who was 18 years old and lives in Richmond, California, claimed Perez had sex with her several times when she had just turned 17 years old. In a series of messages to contacts, asked Guap to send a picture of herself, to which she responds with a nude selfie. So she had two phones, one for sexting and pics and shit, and one for texting.
Wow.
Yep. And she basically screenshotted Deputy Ricardo was his name in her phone. These niggas weren't careful at all.
Wow.
And he texted her about, you know, all this stuff, and they was fucking. She telling everybody. I don't blame her.
Mm-mm.
It's funny, in this picture she got a little kid. In the picture, they had to blur the kid's face out. The kid is holding up a baby doll, but it's like, hold on, I have to show you guys this picture. Like, this is like one of the selfies where they would like make jokes about on Twitter. Like, get your baby, crop your baby out of the picture before you put this picture up, because it's clearly a little baby in this corner holding up a baby doll.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's hilarious. But it's not, though, because those cops are fucking terrible people. But
yes, they are.
She got her little baby in the damn picture with her, man. That is so bad. Like, these niggas didn't know they was gonna get caught. Look, if the prostitute won't even crop her baby out the pictures, she gonna snitch. Okay, y'all going to jail. If they go to jail, the cops, who knows?
We have to go to another police department.
He added her as a friend on Facebook, and she sent him a message, also claiming Perez would pick her up when he was off duty and drive her to a rural road close to Caldecott Tunnel. She told the San Francisco Chronicle in a previous interview they had sex about 10 times in his private vehicle. It was consistent for about a month, six weeks. Then we stopped for the month of August. Then we did it again one more time in September, she said. Oh, she kept records.
Of course.
She said no money was exchanged during her encounters with Perez. 3 police chiefs resigned. So I guess he can say I wasn't, but you knew what you were doing. She's 17. She's a snitch, basically.
Yeah. Young people don't keep secrets.
Yeah. Cops don't either, apparently.
Mm-mm.
They was telling
especially,
each other.
Especially that young.
If 32 cops had sex with her, they were talking about it. They were telling each other. So, yep. Another officer bites the dust. You know, messing with this in this prostitution scandal.
Good. They just hitting the surface. They really did some investigation. I bet you that shit go deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sit down and talk to her. It's probably spewing some way high positions in the fuck of this girl.
Rihanna had a Wembley gig show. And I guess Wembley is, you know, Wembley Stadium.
Okay.
Overseas, in probably in like London or something, Northwest London.
Okay.
You know how I know my geography so well. Well, she sold out these concerts, right? Mm-hmm. But when fans got there, they took pictures of the arena and it's damn near empty. It's like half full at best. And that's because apparently the ticket resellers grossly inflate prices, like with the Hamilton type thing, except people don't buy the tickets because they overestimated the market, and it ends up with people going to the concert and half the fucking seats being empty. It's a 90,000 capacity stadium and they didn't sell most of the tickets when they went to resell them. So now it's pretty much nobody in the fucking arena for this concert.
And maybe it's just me. They shouldn't allow them to get these tickets in mass quantities like this. Maybe that's just me. They just should not allow them to do that, because imagine the people that had planned or wanted to go and was like, I'm not spending that amount of money to go.
Yeah, apparently an increased number of events have been hit by the problem. Fans hoping to see the two-part Harry Potter and the Cursed Child West End show found it difficult to buy tickets, although they were readily available online for €2,000.
Right, who gonna spend that type of money? It's like, why do you allow them to buy these tickets and jack the prices up that fucking high?
Yep.
Because I would be mad if I really wanted to go and was like, well, bitch, I could have went if ain't nobody gonna be in there.
Yeah, somebody, they gotta come up with a way. Apparently they buy these tickets using bots, computer programs, right, which let them get thousands of tickets
at one time, right?
Which, how do you, so I guess that little squiggly line shit don't work no more.
I don't know. And it's one of those things where that's why a lot of times when tickets go on sale, And I do understand there's some tickets for promotion and shit like that, but for the most part, a lot of mass amount of tickets go like this is why it's really hard for people to individually purchase tickets when shit it instantly go online. Like you go online and like sometimes 20, 30 minutes later, they'll be like, it's sold out. Yeah, because you have these fucking 8 to 10 people with these bots buying, you know, 20,000 tickets at one period of time. Of course it's going to sell out.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right, and I don't know, that needs to be corrected, because you got people, like I said, they would love to go, they can't, this was like, I go for the $150, $200, maybe even $500 a ticket, but I'm not spending no $2,000.
And it's not even like scalpers.
No, it's not the same.
You know, like, scalpers actually have, like, a line where they're like, okay, let me just sell tickets for what I can get, because...
Right.
Like, these motherfuckers are just like, well, we just took a loss on this because it's a business. Like, I'll just get the next time. Or
right.
I sold enough to make up for it in the first place, because if I bought tickets for $100 and I was selling them for $2,000, I don't need to sell but so many to break even anyway.
Right. So they don't care that the people that truly wanted to come see her didn't get the opportunity to come see her. As far as they're concerned, they've turned a profit. And it's one of those things where, like I said, that needs to be corrected terribly, you know, because unless you're somebody like you say, like with the Hamilton people, where people just, where they know people are just going to come no matter what, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. It's it wouldn't shock me if this happened to other people go, well, her concert didn't sell that. Nah, the thing said they sold out, which means people purchased the tickets, which means the venue, everybody got their money. Even she got her money, but it's not fair to
fans. Yeah, fans, right, get taken advantage of. What's also weird is, like, I know in America some of the ticket companies own the resellers. Someone brought it up in the chat. Yeah, Joe Spacey brought it up. Yeah, some of the ticket companies own the resellers, and then so they're inflating their own ticket prices. And, like, it's just complete bullshit, man.
Right.
Also, speaking of Rihanna pulled out of the Lollapalooza Colombia over the Zika virus fears, forcing organizers to cancel the music festival after they left without a headline act.
I don't blame them. They're getting sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't name her, but she's been identified as the performer who dropped out of the festival by Columbia News outlet. Man, I just can't believe we got people that are going to go to the Olympics in Rio. Like, everything I hear about that shit sounds like a nightmare.
They need to cancel that shit.
No, they're not going to cancel it. It's too late for that shit. I mean, you can't, what, you gonna cancel it like the week of? It's not gonna happen. Oh, sorry, no Olympics this year, y'all. My bad. They gonna have them Olympics.
Yeah, but like I say, it's gonna be weird for people coming, because most of your major stars and athletes are like, fuck that. Here's a no name, because I'm not going out there and possibly dying and getting sick.
It's just hard to tell between, it's really just hard to tell because, you know, there's so much of America that just shits on other countries.
True.
Period. So sometimes it feels like American propaganda, but then, like, I mean, I'm sure that's some of it. But then you read some of these stories and you're like, well, the corruption of the Olympic Committee is just so fucked up.
Right.
They're kind of like the World Cup, where it's like, whoever lines our pockets, however they do it, we don't care. We're just going to send the Olympics there. And if it's inhumane conditions, if it's slave labor, if it's pollution, we don't give a fuck.
Nope.
We just want the money from it. And that's it, you know? Right. So it's really weird. Yeah. But I guess at the same time, who would be able to host if they just limited it to, you know, quote unquote, places that we consider safe? You know, I feel like the Olympics happen every 4 years and they choose these locations just to make me feel like, well, maybe America ain't that bad, you know?
True. And a lot of stuff has came out. I think initially when they got it, a lot of people protested from the beginning, and from what I'm hearing, and was telling them, hey, they can't accommodate this, they have problems, yada yada yada, and people, you know, ignored them. And, you know, they're talking about a lot of the issues that they're having with you know, building all this shit and can't afford it. It's, I think it's a possibility that they are in bankruptcy, asking for extra money, and, you know, and shit like that. And it's a whole bunch of other problems. Like you said, they're not looking at it from that perspective, or how would it affect the people years later. Mm-hmm. Like, none of that shit really, you know, matters at the time. Yeah, they're still going to have it, but, you know, I wonder, and I think my biggest perspective, how is it going to affect the ratings? Because, like you said, a lot of the people,
I mean, ratings,
go see, aren't
attendance might be affected, but ratings, we on TV. How is it going to stop me from watching it? That's why would I care?
On TV, yeah.
I mean, I can't catch the Zika through watching that shit, so.
True.
I don't think it'll affect ratings as much. I mean, maybe just a little bit because some of the bigger names don't go, but not enough people are opting out. And as far as the Olympics, which is almost farcical to call it amateur sports.
Right.
The people that have been working their whole lives and they only get a few opportunities in their entire lifetime to go, they're not going to not go. You know, if I do fucking the 100 yard dash, it's not every year that I get to be on a world stage doing a 100 yard dash for the world, you know, and it's almost unfair that they send these people to these fucked up places knowing that, hey, if you're, you know, 16, 18, whatever, you get 3 to 4 tries to be, in the Olympics. You know, and then you're fucked. So, yeah, they're gonna go. Jack Daniels embraces a hidden ingredient. Slavery. Mm-hmm.
No shit.
Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Jack Daniels.
Say what?
I said it's called Jack Daniels.
What does that have to do with slavery? I don't get it.
Daniels got jacked.
Okay, there you go. Every year, about 275,000 people tour the Jack Daniels distillery here. And as they stroll through its brick buildings nestled in a tree hollow, they hear a story like this. Sometime in the 1850s, when Daniel was a boy, he went to work for a preacher, grocer, and distiller named Dan Call. The preacher was a busy man, and when he saw a promising young Jack, he taught him how to run his whiskey still, and the rest is history. This year is the 150th anniversary of Jack Daniels, and the distillery, home to one of the world's best-selling whiskeys, is using the occasion to tell a different, more complicated tale. Daniel.
Tell the truth.
Tell the truth. I need to get that sound clip. Daniel, the company now says, didn't learn distilling from Dan Call, but from a man named Nearest Green, one of Call's slaves. This version of the story was never a secret, but it's one that the distillery has only recently begun to embrace tentatively in some of its tours and in a social media and marketing campaign this summer. It's taken something like the anniversary for us to start to talk about it ourselves, said Nelson Eddie Jack Daniels, in-house historian. Frontier history is a gauzy and unreliable pursuit, a narrow screen story built on oral history and the thinnest of archival trails may never be definitively proved. Still, the decision to tell it resonates far beyond the small city. For years, the prevailing history of American whiskey has been framed as a lily white affair. centering on German and Scot Irish settlers who distilled their surplus grains into whiskey and sent it off to far off markets, eventually creating a $2.9 billion industry and a product equally loved by Kentucky colonels and Brooklyn hipsters. Left out of that account were men like Nearest Green. Slavery and whiskey, far from being two separate strands of Southern history, were inextricably entwined. Enslaved men not only made up the bulk of the distilling labor force, but they often played crucial skilled roles in the whiskey making process.
Of course.
In the same way that the white cookbook authors often appropriated recipes from their black cooks, white distillery owners took credit for the whiskey.
Right.
Well, I'm glad they're talking about it.
Right. My biggest thing is that I guarantee you before they said this, they wanted to be sure they, you know, they either they already paid this family or they made sure that person didn't have no descendants, because, you know, y'all making billions of dollars off of a recipe that's really not yours.
Yeah, my question is this. What other shit did niggas invent that we didn't get credit for?
A lot of shit. I'm not trying to be funny. I probably can't even imagine the shit.
I bet it's major shit though. Not like right. little, I mean like mm. the light bulb.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, I'm talking about like metal, like
yeah, metal. Like George Washington probably was like, why would I tie a fucking key to a kite and shock myself with electricity when Cletus can do it? Cletus, come here real quick, hold this and run around in the storm.
Right. Cletus got shocked one good time and next thing you know, he writing a book about it.
Right. By golly, it worked. Well, I'll write about it. I'll take all the credit. Thank you. Thank you, Cletus. Mm-hmm. I mean, technically, I own you, so, right. You know.
So, as far as they're concerned, this story is mine. I couldn't imagine all types of cures and shit like that, that, you know, we just watch it, but it would never get credit, would never get paid for.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else happened. Family of U.S. student killed in the Paris attacks sue social media companies. Families of a California design student killed in November attacks in Paris sues Twitter Incorporated, Google, and Facebook Incorporated, claiming the social media companies provide material support to the militant group Islamic State. Naomi Gonzalez's family filed a lawsuit on Tuesday in federal court in San Francisco, asking the court to rule that the companies are violating the U.S. Anti-Terrorism Act. It seeks compensatory damages to be determined by the court. For years, defendants have knowingly permitted the terrorist group ISIS to use their social networks as a tool for spreading extremist propaganda, raising funds, and attracting new recruits. The lawsuit charged that the company's material support has enabled Islamic State to recruit and to fund and carry out numerous terror attacks, including the attacks in Paris last November that killed 130 people, including Gonzalez, who was a California State University student studying abroad at the time. So basically they're saying you allow these people to use your platforms, social media, maybe under the auspices of free speech or something, I don't know, and that helps them organize and shit, and it helps recruit terrorists, and y'all let it happen on your account, on your media, so we're suing you. Mm. It'll be interesting to see if that can
stand.
Yeah, if that stands and what the U.S. government thinks about that.
Right.
And, you know, how that'll be viewed, and will that extend to, well, I doubt it will, but will it extend to other, you know, things like the KKK?
Right.
You know, will they take them down? You know, shit like that. You know, some of these neo-Nazis that recruit via the internet and stuff. I don't know. It just makes you wonder. Here's an interesting, actually it's kind of long, but you know, it's just me and you. We got time, you know, we might as well do this.
Okay.
This dude wrote a blog in the Huffington Post called Love Will Be the Death of Us, attached his government name, Ian McKenzie, to it.
Oh, shit.
And it's notes on the end of my marriage. Author's note, this is a sincere attempt to learn the end of a relationship, a final love letter of sorts. Some of the names have been changed and my former partners can send it to a publication. Now, I don't know what these numbers mean, 8.2. So August 2011, maybe the beginning. There's no easy way to masturbate into a small plastic container.
What?
I found this out as I approached climax, simultaneously holding the container in place while stroking my erection with the other hand. Truth be told, I don't actually masturbate very often. Perhaps something about the act I continue to find shameful. Suddenly a rush of white light and a moment of fleeting ecstasy. I returned to room B at the Genesis Fertility Clinic in downtown Vancouver. Two voluptuous women continued their own vigorous pleasure on the TV screen mounted above my head. I steadied my breath and screwed a cap onto the container. I buckled my jeans, grabbed the remote, flick off the screen. I catch my image in the mirror, triggering an existential moment that feels utterly cliche.
Is this XXXN one of them stories you click on in the back?
Nope. And you a freak for knowing about that. All the cautionary tales of my younger years flooding back into montage of bad teen movies, sex ed classes, and awkward chats with my father. Millions of sperm live in every drop of semen he worn. Sometimes they can live for over 9 days, and the ominous warning fed to every heterosexual male, don't get your girlfriend pregnant. So he was basically trying to, at a fertility clinic to, you know, him and his wife went there to try to help her get pregnant.
Okay.
Not only did the conception fail to arise without the aid of birth control, my wife mysteriously had no menstrual cycle at all. Thus began the odyssey of doctor's visits, diet supplements, hormone therapies, aka trying to get pregnant. And he goes back to the past, at 22, and a pioneer at the early age of internet dating. He went online, found him a woman on Lava Life, and he went on a date with her. And they spoke on the phone a week later. Her voice was sultry, it was sexy and shit. And they kissed on their first date. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he took a picture. He got a picture on here, everything. Treatment. The first gray sky we've had in weeks in Vancouver. Okay. So then he went through treatment for his sperm. His sperm counts have tested normal. Her lack of menstrual cycle remains a challenge. The doctor has surmised various theories, including hormonal imbalance and all this stuff. So they couldn't get pregnant, basically.
Okay, that happens.
You know, so then they had a miscarriage.
Okay.
You know, he was real sad. Then, let's see, what was that next thing? Did he go to church, was it? Yeah, temple. I gaze upon the temple of transition, this palace of grief, adorned by the fears and scribes of thousands of burners. It is my third year drifting through her halls, and this time I finally understand why she is here. In a culture addicted to light, there is no altar for darkness, yet life does not feed life. Only death can do that. The man is burned for the party. The temple is burned for our grief, an offering for our willingness to remember that those who came before and perhaps those that never will. Nigga, what? Was he high when he wrote this? Wrap it up, B. Good grief. let's see what's scarcely 20 minutes pass and the crew begins boarding up the doorways in preparation for the burn. I'm asked politely but firmly to leave. Outside the perimeter, I face the tattered city and discover I'm accompanied by Sean, my best friend since high school, and we walk wearily back to camp. He observes my face, asking tenderly what is wrong. I don't look at him when I respond. I don't think I'm going to have children with Catherine. That night, no tears are shed. I couldn't watch her burn. 2 weeks later, as I return to the footage for the first time, I glimpse again at the intact temple. She shatters me and I weep. I don't understand what that one meant. The temple?
What are we burning?
Then in October, 2 months later, right, were they burning, like, the body of the miscarriage?
That's what I'm assuming.
He said he went to Burning Man, so... went to Burning Man, and then okay, Temple Man. Of Transition is where he went in. So
okay, I'm
he
with got, you
He
now.
Was high as fuck.
Yeah.
The Burning Man decompression is a regional part. This is for The Kiss that occurs in many cities. Vancouver booked an extraordinary movie prop warehouse. Here's for ruining me for all future party locations. He arrived late. His friends were already there. He spot Catherine clothed in red leggings and a sheer black shirt. She's sexy and flirtatious. She leaps into me. I wrap my arms tightly around her waist. She untangles herself and disappears into the cloud, a blur of faces and limbs. Hello, I look down and a young woman with dreadlocks is sitting in a large armchair. I kneel beside her. We exchange pleasantries, sincere and open-hearted. I discover she's a spoken word public. Please share a poem, I ask. She shakes her head embarrassed. Please, I insist. She relents and I lean in with eyes closed. words tumble into my ear one after another, lyrical and playful. I'm drawn into her language, the new territory conjured out of heart and soul. When finished, I open my eyes, gratitude beaming on my face. She kisses me hard, surprised I let it happen. And when it's over, we lean back. I'm married, I say, without an ounce of accusation. She immediately apologetic. No, okay, it's okay, I say. It was an honest mistake. Confusion flashes across her face. You don't seem married, she says. Her words puncture my heart. I look at her sadly. I know, I say. So 2 months after his wife miscarried, he's kissing a woman at a party, huh? It happens again, always a different and worthy woman. This is June 2012 now, so it's been months.
It sounds like he need to
8 months
not be with his wife no more.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is probably a decision you should have been made.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, apparently comfort with a stricken artist at a conference in Salish Sea, honor for a delightful dance with a soulful healer in Vancouver, championship for a lonely entrepreneur Athena in San Francisco. So he was fucking all kinds of women. Sound like they're all hippies though. These interactions weighed heavy on my soul. I could not make sense of them. On one hand, each felt appropriate, life affirming, and needed. Surely these could not be considered cheating. What was a kiss anyway? On the other hand, such interactions were beyond the boundaries of our monogamous partnership. Oh, so he said he was just kissing them. To which Catherine and I vowed, in my uncertainty, I waited, hoping somehow the situation would resolve itself. Eventually, the guilt crested, and I crafted a confession. In our newly purchased suburban home, we sat across from each other in our quiet anticipation. There's something I need to tell you. I speak and watch the color drain from her face. Her entire body quivers. Milan Kundera wrote, loves are like empires. When the idea that they are founded on crumbles, they too fade away. By the end of my story, our marriage has begun its slow descent into the sand.
It's a melodramatic crap.
He got away with words for a cheek ass nigga. Toss that shit in that flowery language.
Right.
Oh my God. 6 months since my confession and the question of what to do about my infidelity remains unresolved. Given the potential window for conception is closing, we agree to focus one final tip for pregnancy. We try again, this time with implanted eggs. The doctor gives us an x-ray of the delicate twins, which we place on our altar at home. We resist the urge to discuss potential baby names. This is November 2012, by the way. And of course they have another failure. So they can't have kids. That afternoon I removed the x-ray from the altar and slide the photograph between the books on the shelf.
So they still tried again?
They tried again one last time. So then January 2013, opening the relationship. Mm-hmm. They went to their favorite vacation spot. Catherine's mother decided to fund an overdue family trip to Maui, which was her favorite vacation spot of her late husband. They was chilling out with the in-laws. This nigga had the nerve to do this with the in-laws. Anyway, I retained an extra week for ourselves with enough space to revisit the question once more. In the absence of biological children, what are we to become? So, because she can't have kids, of course, you know, she's worthless as a wife, right? Obviously.
And as a human being and a person, okay.
I think we should try an open relationship. I can't quite believe the words are tumbling out of my mouth within the paradigm of the dominant culture.
It's already open on your side. It's closed on hers.
Yeah. You already had it pretty open, buddy.
Right.
Right now.
If it was open on both sides, that's a whole other story. But no, mm-hmm. You were already open.
She eventually reluctantly agrees. That's not the way I want to go into an open relationship.
Right. If it's open, everybody needs to be cool. If everybody is not cool with it, it won't end well.
Mm-hmm. The book came with, so I guess he had a book or something that came with a helpful questionnaire, which we use as a foundation for our initial agreements and guidelines. What does open mean? What is the difference between sensual and sexual? Are overnights allowed? Should we have veto power on the other's connections? As darkness creeps into the room, serenaded by army of frogs, we sign our names and step into the abyss.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is not something she wanted to do. She's trying to save her marriage, apparently.
Yeah.
I might be wrong, but from her perspective.
Because it's almost like a hostage situation at that point.
Right.
Because it's like, if I say no, now what? You going to leave?
Right, because you're making me feel bad about not having kids. Mm-hmm. You are, you know, kissing these women. You finally break down and you tell me, you know, because if you didn't think anything was wrong with it, and if we truly had already had an open, because the thing you didn't tell me, because you know that she wouldn't be cool with it. So if she's not cool with a kiss, what make you think she would be cool? Not trying to be funny, but you fucking women.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently he begins using words like polyamorous and non-monogamy in conversation. Oh God, so he jumped in feet first.
Yeah, because he was already there anyway.
Right. I learned that you don't make any important decisions during NRE, new relationship energy, and that compersion, taking joy in your partner's joy, is the opposite of jealousy, but that both can exist simultaneously. I explore a variety of connection with multiple women and have the first sexual experience outside of my marriage. After 10 years with the same partner, the scent and curves of a new woman feels at once odd and exhilarating. I keep going. I learned that while possibilities for connections are endless, time and energy are not. Catherine and I practice regular communication, though mostly I don't see her. She embraces the openness with a vigor I'd never seen. Oh, shit.
Right, because this is some bullshit she wasn't ready for.
Suddenly, she is free to entertain the secret desire she never confessed, perhaps even to herself. She calls ex-boyfriends to catch up, partly out of curiosity for their lives, partly to flaunt her newfound sexual prowess.
Right, and when I say bullshit, I don't mean bullshit like the concept, but in her mind, she was like, this is not what I signed up for when I married you.
Also, she probably could tell, right? Right. I mean, that's the thing that, from the other side of this, while he's talking about the part where he's kissing different women over the course of a few months.
Oh, she seemed to change.
And when she miscarried and he starts questioning who are they and what are they and what they're going to be and what's going to happen to them and shit. I'm sure she can sense it emotionally, if not just through his time, that, oh, this dude's no longer committed to me the way that he promised, and he's looking down on me like I'm some type of bummer, and I'm still a young, attractive woman in the prime of my life, you know, like, to some extent, like, if this is what you want to do, then fine, fuck it. It's easier for women to get dick than for dudes to get pussy in the general on the regular, because the dick market is flooded.
Yeah, it is, and it's one of those things where he was like, oh, we're gonna be open, but a lot of times when people think open, they always think from a male perspective, where they're like, hey, you know, I can go fuck too if we're gonna be completely open. But a lot of dudes want the open relationship with, oh, it's open on my end but closed on yours. And for a lot of women, like, nah, we all fucking.
Mm-hmm. He says, I grow closer to a particular woman, Maya. We speak in poetry and myth. She whispers a willingness to explore my untapped sexual nature. She also is engaged to another, and both of us remain secure in our existing relationships, having to explore our connection without the pressure of core partnership. Late spring, Catherine and I stand on a deserted beach playing fetch with our much-loved dog, Toby, with an I. I toss the stick in the water and conversation turns toward our latest erotic adventures. I asked if she ever thought of exploring with her business partner, Cameron. For the past 4 years, they had cooperated a successful yoga studio in our suburban city. Would that bother you? She asked hesitantly. It makes sense, I responded, picking up the stick again. You already work well together. Seems like it will happen eventually. Are you saying I can explore with him? A hint of jealousy surfaces. He is an accomplished athlete, fit, and handy with tools.
A hint of jealousy within him, right?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, but you God. Expected her to be cool, though? All right.
In many ways, my complete opposite. I remind myself the purpose of our open relationship is to explore our boundaries.
Nah, he meant open for him, not open for her.
Sure, I say. I throw the stick back in the water and Toby rushes after it.
And he did, but he didn't mean that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wasn't being truthful with himself.
So, 6 months later, July 2013, early one summer day without hormone therapy or warning, Catherine's menstrual cycle returns. She informs me in bed, breathless. We're washed in the mystery. No guarantee of fertility, but a promising sign nonetheless. She spends most of her time with Cam. I begin hearing stories of her vibrant nature from mutual friends. I barely recognize this woman, says one who has known her for years. I can't shake the feeling that Catherine is drifting away from me. We continue our weekly check-ins, but her shares are mostly uneventful. No, our external relationships aren't competing for our own, yet we're still deeply committed to each other. I opt to spend a weekend away at a local festival with Maya. On my way out the door, I choose a tarot card from the deck. Standing practice for ongoing insight into our relationship, the Tower. The image is a large burning Buddha illuminated by lightning, fires raging across his skin. A man and a woman plunge from his figure, unsettled. I depart for the festival. What a hippie ass. Anyway, the next few days are magic. A bevy of playful adventures with friends, sweet connections, and beach bonfires. On the final day, after most of the others have packed up, I look upon the last night fading from the snow-capped mountains overhead. Maya puts her arms softly around my waist. I grip once again by an unbidden ache of sorrow. I don't know why, but I feel like I will say goodbye to Catherine soon. A few days later, Cam is at my house for a backyard barbecue for the yoga studio members. He's awkward in his small talk. I let them host and mostly stay out of the way. The next morning, Catherine is visibly shaking and asks me to accompany her outside on the grass. We sit in the afternoon sun. I don't realize I'm holding my breath. Finally, she says, I'm pregnant. My mind races. She and I hadn't been intimate in weeks. There was only one other way possible. With Cam, she finishes.
Right. This nigga. Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh man. Q dagger plunged directly into my heart. Q, an impossible mixture of utter devastation and shining joy at the possibility of her being a mother, something she wanted for so long. Fuck, I screamed louder than I've ever been. I can't look at her. I stare at the grass as I could stare hard enough so that she would take back her words. I don't believe it. It's not possible. And yet the tower is burning.
What the entire fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who wrote this? This is on Lifetime.
Ian, whatever his name was, McKenzie. So then August of that year, so a month later, Myth of the One. In the days follow, I'm not ready to collapse in the existing expectations about what's to come. I ask her, what do you actually want? Was this an accident? Do you still want to be with me? Do you want the three of us to co-parent? Amid ongoing tears and wreckage of our old life, she confesses her terrible dilemma. I don't think I can love more than one man, therefore I choose him.
Right. And it makes sense. It makes complete sense. Because it sounds like she never wanted an open relationship. She reluctantly did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was playing with them forces. He didn't understand.
She wasn't all in, dog.
Soon we are sitting across the table from our parents, married 30-plus years, who look to us with cautious optimism. I'd already warned the news wasn't what they might be expecting, and true to them. And most of our friends, Catherine and I, were the perfect couple, loving, productive, and stable. We never quarreled, ever. I break the news. Catherine and I are separating. My mother immediately bursts into tears. My father leaps into a fix-it mode, suggesting the merits of marriage counseling. We're certain, I confirm. They did not know about our open relationship, and I feel it's too much to reveal the pregnancy now. Plus, I can't admit the secret shame that I had screwed things up. I had ruined my marriage. Yeah. See, that's fucked up, because people are going to assume the worst of her, right? Because she's pregnant and y'all are separating and you're not the father. So everyone's going to be like, oh, well, she cheated on him and he's scorned. He's the one who's really the victim here, and this is really sad for him. Nah, you should have to tell everybody what happened.
The truth.
Because if not, they're going to look at her like she's some kind of bad person. Because that's what people do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all going to be our own the table, because you're not gonna make me look like Boo Boo the Fool when you were the one that wanted this goddamn open relationship, and that's what you got.
Mm-hmm. He spent the rest of the month on the road. He spends a lot of time on the road. I wonder what he does. Returning only to pack my share of the belongings. No battle, no lawyers. Catherine finds the paperwork online and we fill it out on the kitchen table. We agree to split the mortgage equity. I will take the vehicle, the blender, Nintendo Wii.
not the Wii. I want the bongo set too and the running pad. Give me that power gun.
That's how I feel right now.
Yes.
I feel like that's the guy who wrote this.
Yes, I better have that Mario.
What's the Games dude wrote this?
Yes, he did.
She will retain the rest of the household contents. I spend the afternoon carrying my things out the front door, packing them in the car. It's both freeing and sorrowful when I realize my life now fits into a 2002 Subaru Hatchback. Mm-hmm. My plan is to catch a ferry to Victoria, where my friend has already set up a desk in her office. I have found a temporary apartment just outside of downtown, close to Maya, whose long-term relationship partner has also ended for reasons that remain their own. For one last time, I sit alone in the backyard patio of the house that no longer bears my name. I light the cigarette I had taken from Catherine's secret stash. I rarely smoke, and I watch it curl into the amber dusk. A few hours before, she had revealed how she had begun drifting from our marriage the first time I confessed about kissing the other woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Almost a year earlier, she never told me I pleaded. How could I have saved us? Nigga.
If you don't get the fuck out of here. Because the thing is that you should have been truthful with her and gave her the option. You basically held her hostage to save the marriage for an open relationship that it sounds like she didn't want to step into in the first place. And so that's why I'm like, well, it's bullshit to her, because she's like, I did not sign up for open marriage. Like, if everybody's cool with it and it works for you, cool. But if everybody's not, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, the fact that you said she reluctantly had to come into this open marriage,
right?
Like, that ain't good, bruh.
No,
you know, like, that's, like I said, that's not how you want to go into it. And especially when someone is essentially saying like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about this, but you know, you just gonna decide like, yeah, we're gonna do open marriage now, because I've been already cheating on you, essentially kissing other women and shit. So it's basically a hostage situation. You're going to lose me unless you do an open marriage with me, because that's the only way I'm staying with your ass. And she fucking around, built some self-confidence, got out there and got some new dick and was like, you know what? New dick, new me. New phone, who this?
Right. And see, that's the thing. It's one of those things where you already made her not feel like shit, because she done had, y'all tried to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. She couldn't get pregnant every time.
You made her sound like a failure. Like it was her fault. What are we going to do now that you can't have kids?
Right.
Basically, you had two miscarriages, so it's your fault. So now I'm supposed to be stuck with you, a broken woman? Really?
Right. So we couldn't adopt or nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Like all those options. And who's to say she might have been cool with that? But like, cool, you know, we can't have kids, but let's go adopt. But you know, you like, nah, fuck that. Because it's one of those things where, and you got what you wanted. You wanted an open relationship, but you technically wanted to open on your side, because a lot of times, for a lot of dudes, when they glamorize these open relationships, it's like, yeah, I can fuck all the bitches I want, but what make you think she don't want no dick, dog?
Let me start a new session for everybody real quick, because obviously we're going to go over the 90 minutes. So, okay. Part two. What's today's date? 7/5?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And what time is this? 11? Mm-hmm. So I'll just say 11. 7. Okay. Create session. And I'll just invite everybody over to it, and I'll put you back on screen, and we'll do what we've been. Yeah. Prepare to go live. Call audience to session. Okay. And says I'm not broadcast. Okay, now go live. Yes, let's go. And I will add you back to the screen. Karen, I just invited you. And then we'll get right back to the story.
No problem.
And this is a pretty smooth transition here. Mm-hmm. All right. So
because
back to
automatically rose it by the which is what I like.
Back to the story. So, I believed wholeheartedly the myth of the one, the belief that human happiness means finding your other half, pledging them your heart and soul, and committing until death do you part. She was my one. Yet I struggled for years to reconcile my desire for others with the inherited story of traditional monogamous marriage. The hidden cost of monogamy, when culturally reinforced as the only acceptable ideal, is the unquestioned coupling of sexual fidelity with real partnership. Anything falling outside those norms is at best labeled an unwillingness to commit, at worst condemned for hedonistic promiscuity. Herein lies the scorpion's tale, the myth of the one. So basically saying, like, I don't believe in there only being one person for you, but obviously he does, now that he fucked it up. He thinks that Catherine was the one for him.
Yeah, she believed in the one, and the one wasn't no longer you.
Mm-hmm. So he basically said, Make no mistake, one person can never be another's everything. It's too much for them to bear, but that doesn't stop many of us from trying and blaming ourselves for the almost certainty of failure. For Catherine, I had vowed to keep our course steady. When I had decided to rock the boat, she had wisely fled to the nearest safest ship. I stubbed out, is that what it was? I stubbed out my cigarette before it burned my fingers and headed towards the car.
She fled it to another dick, and that was the problem. Like, it's okay, it was okay for you, but like I said, a lot of dudes like that. It's okay for you, but you know, Lord forbid, you know, she get pregnant by the other dude and it becomes a problem.
Right, you couldn't handle that. And she didn't ever want to really be in that. So no. It wasn't about the nearest safest ship. It was about the fact that you turned out to be a fuck nigga.
Right.
So she dipped, you know what I mean? Like it like near safest ship, it sounded like she fucked a lot of ships on the way to the dude that she worked with, which you said you were okay with.
Right
You want to test the boundaries until the boundaries go out of bounds, right
out of what you consider in bounds.
Early September, we agreed a journey to our friend's tiny cabin in Salt Spring Island. I asked Catherine to gather an assortment of things that constitute the record of our relationship: anniversary cards, small gifts, faded photographs. Asked her to bring incense, our wedding vows, and her wedding ring. As the late summer sunshine shatters the window, we construct an altar to our collection, a throne befitting 10 years together. After a silence, we sit cross-legged from each other and face the precipice. Her eyes quiver and my heart leaps into my throat. What a mysterious life, I wonder. How has it come to this? Because you couldn't keep your digging, man. It's easy to love the beginning of things. It's easy to love them in bloom when their colors are bursting, fragrance cast to the wind. Yet how hard to love the end of things, to love their inevitable decay as blossoms wither and drift once again toward the dark earth. I cannot believe he wrote this.
He really did write this.
Huh?
But men aren't emotional, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just can't believe anybody would write this.
Yeah.
I unrolled, like, he took the biggest L, man. I unrolled the paper containing our vows, left virtually untouched since our wedding. I remember the gathering of friends and family, the silver laughter and the way her father walked her down the aisle. I remember her aching smile and how she knew that life could not possibly be sweeter than this moment. I read our vows aloud. Sorry. Halfway through the first line, I'm shaking. By the end of the second, tears streaming down my face. I struggle to continue. She reaches over, finds the next line slowly through her cheek, though her cheeks are a river. I'm sorry your marriage didn't work. My mother's words echo in my mind. When a marriage is all, can it only be seen as failure? Can a relationship also succeed, not because it lasts forever, but how it ends? Sure. Mm-hmm. Life does not feed.
Yeah.
You were the one who set the parameters of failure when you said she couldn't have kids, so you need to start fucking other people.
Right.
Like, what were you going to do? Fuck other people and then have kids? And also, I feel like even if this dude would have had kids, some point he would have decided he was trapped. Because his whole thing was, how can I possibly want to fuck other people if I'm in a relationship with the truest person I'm supposed to be with? That's really that was his line. Like, I should never be physically attracted to another person, right? And it's like, yeah, you were gonna fuck this up at some point if that's your true belief. That
right.
You were supposed to live your whole life being like, I never will ever see another person that I'm tempted to have sex with. The vow's complete. Catherine folds the paper. We look at each other. I grip my wedding ring, slide it from my finger, feeling a sorrowful weight. She does the same. We arrange both rings on the altar. Man, he do a lot of white shit.
Melodramatic.
Yeah, an altar and all this shit. We sat cross-legged from each other. We each take one piece of paper and my pen hovers. I don't know what to call this process. Breakup seems harsh and somehow violent. Separation feels generic and falsely benign. I arrive at divergence. Is that the next
like in the movie?
Yes, the next in the Independence Day.
Right.
For a time, we journeyed together, and now we will follow our own divergent paths again, not knowing what the future might bring. We proceed to write each other new vows and for the next chapter. A lifetime passes before we end our ceremony and pack up the altar. The day is now a golden evening. So, in February 2014, he said he got to meet the kid. Mm-hmm. So
what is your relationship to the baby?
Huh?
What is his relationship to the child?
I don't know, right?
Godparent? Uncle Daddy?
Mm-hmm. She confesses to waking late nights racked by sobs, stricken with grief. The man in her bed struggles with how to support, but knows he can do little. They rearrange the home and prepare for the baby. They hire a doula and construct a container for a water birth in their living room. Yeah, they some heavies. In the early February, 9 months from conception, I'm on the ferry heading back to Vancouver for a business meeting. I receive a text. Layla was born this morning, 7:30 a.m., 7 pounds. I did it without drugs at home. We are well. For a moment, I had been a man driving on the highway, lost in motion. For a moment, I had forgotten pain stabs my heart. I text back, so this is love, the willingness to be broken again and again. Then I added, sending blessings upon your new life. The willingness to be broken again and again. Catherine is quick to recover. 3 days later, she invites me to coffee near her yoga studio, situated in town where we first met 10 years earlier. This place had become her place. I headed to the meeting unsure how to feel. I searched my memory for cues from television shows and Hollywood movies. Eventually, I settled on low-grade anxiety. So they meet. She slowly unwraps the bundle. I see the peaceful face of a newborn girl, pink and sleeping. I touch her impossibly tiny fingers. We sit. She tells me about the birth, the beauty, and the pain. An acquaintance walks by with her dog and, ignorant of our separation, compliments us on the birth of our new child. We both smile awkwardly, sadly, and the woman continues, likely confused. I ask Catherine about our dog, Toby, and how she's adjusted to the new baby.
Of course, he just wanted the wee.
Right. He got his wee. He good.
He was straight.
Soon after, I recognize her partner walking down the street. He doesn't look up. Perhaps sensing we are in his vision, I look to Catherine, who glances furtively back at me. I pause and shout his name and wave him over to us. He draws up slowly, uncertain what to expect. In that moment, I don't know either. The hurt animal in me wants to strike him square in the jaw, spouting rage and obscenities. What? This dude is a piece of, wow, real piece of work.
Shit.
The quiet peacemaker in me wants to remain detached and equanimous. I stand up and say, congratulations on your new child, Cameron. Thank you, he says with noticeable relief. The moment is over and he continues onward. After he's gone, Catherine whispers her gratitude. We finish our coffees and are soon delivered back to our separate lives. And then let's see, May 2015, so this is a year and 3 months later. The divorce paperwork crawls over the next year. Eventually, we find ourselves in a nondescript notary's office on a hot summer's morning. They aren't ready for our appointment, so we grab lunch in a nearby restaurant. I order a pint. She gets a double gin and tonic. We catch up on life. Our regular phone talks have dwindled, so we have more to say this time in person. We tacitly avoid the matter at hand half an hour later.
She got shit to do. She got a baby.
Right. Like, I don't got time for this. We head back to the office. We say our goodbyes after they sign everything. I don't know when I shall see her next. At home, into the quiet evening, I craft a poem.
Oh shit, now
today
today
we signed the paperwork. Wait, hold up.
When you got the yams, what's the yams? The yams are the power that be.
That's the best part. Anyway, today we signed the paperwork. What began as a public celebration ended in an indistinct office with fluorescent lights. Make no mistake, the end of marriage is a death and must be grieved in a manner befitting the gift of a decade together. Yet what lies at the heartbreak? Perhaps our remaining challenge is to find the label that adequately conveys what we have become. We are still searching. In the meantime, there is soft friendship and a quiet love beneath it all.
Am I supposed to snap? What am I supposed to do? I don't know.
This is amazing.
You bought this upon yourself, sir.
Well, she miscarried. He was dry-eyed, right?
Come on.
Didn't cry at all. Left to go to Burning Man. Kissed some other woman at a party with his wife at the party. Then he was like, open marriage, on family vacation time in Maui, where he booked an extra week just to tell her that. And then she went and got, pregnant by some other dude. And then he was like, I'm the real victim here. This nigga, he don't take all the cake. My God. All right.
He get 100.
Right. Jesus, man.
Yeah, especially when she didn't sign up for an open marriage, and you you technically forced her into one. She was like, "Oh, okay, we open. Well, I'll be open over here and closed at the same time. You could be open all by yourself."
What a piece of work, man. That's all I can come up with. Just seems like a horrible person.
Yeah, but then you didn't want to take a hit publicly because you didn't want to come out and say my fucked up decisions made us split.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's like, hey, you can't have no kids, so you ain't worth shit. Basically, is how he came to her.
Right. Like I said, if she would have been cool with it, cool. But like I said, she was reluctant from the beginning.
Yeah,
so this I'm
gonna leave you.
To fail.
Yeah, I'm already cheating on you. You want to have an open relationship? That's essentially what he said. Like, you didn't come into this honestly. You came into this with some. It's like you hijacked the relationship. Like, it's either this or nothing.
Right. Then he turns around and gets mad when, you know, gets quote unquote jealous. When she was like, oh, okay, you know what? You getting pussy? I'm getting dick. All of a sudden, you become enraged and angry.
Well, and then especially once she got pregnant and moved on and had an actual baby.
Right.
Like, then at that point, he's like, I'm the real victim. No, nigga, you started the whole spiral. This is just desserts. She probably somewhere happy without your ass.
Right. And she would have been willing to keep trying, sounds like, but you was like, nah, fuck it.
Shout out to Cam. He the real MVP. All right. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. Time to read the articles from all over the globe that, oh wait, it's time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. Well, we can find articles from all over the globe, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100 at intervals of 25 for how much we feel fucked with as black people. Today's contestants, a woman on the flight. Okay, she made it. Let's see what's going on with her. So apparently there was a woman on a flight who got carried off for being drunk.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. She was suspected of drinking a little too much, you know, hitting the juice, getting loose in the Mile High Club. Here's some footage. Security is dragging her off the plane.
He's stepping on my hair on purpose.
Were you gonna stop?
Get off my shin. Get my phone. Sorry.
The part that was blanked out was when she called them psycho black ass motherfucker at one of the officers. Mm-hmm.
Ah!
I'm sure that was the worst of it. I know. She not only verbally abused a black police officer, but kicked and shouted her way through the aisles as she tried to wriggle out of the grip of the police officers. So, yeah, she, apparently was barefoot, wearing ripped jeans and a white strappy top that had ridden up. She was carried off with her handbag still dangling from her shoulder. She struggled from the officer's grip, accusing him of stepping on her hair and shin. She yelled, "Get my phone."
Imagine the person that probably had to, like, now I gotta get off the plane.
Mm-hmm. So, hopefully everything worked out, you know. 0 to 100, Karen.
Oh, this is 100. I put Guess the Race in the thing. I'm sorry, y'all. We're not playing Guess the Race, but, yeah, she was white. Cause niggas be like, bitch, I already paid for my ticket. You on your own.
Yeah, I gotta go to 25 for me. Let's see. Headmaster quits in race scandal at America's oldest public school after two black students make a video exposing racist abuse. Okay. The headmaster at America's oldest public school has stepped down amid accusations she failed to act on racist abuse. Lynn Mooney Tedda, along with assistant headmaster Malcolm Flynn, have now resigned from the Boston Latin School in Massachusetts following an investigation into the administration's handling of racial discrimination. Black students had launched a social media campaign, hashtag Black at BLS, aimed at highlighting the underlying racial tensions at the school in January. Mm-hmm. apparently things were not too good up there.
They probably bought this shit to y'all attention and y'all glossed over that bullshit.
Maggie Noel, president of BLACK at BLS, and fellow member Callie Webster Kazoo, posted a video on YouTube last January saying that black students were often suspected of racist behavior or slurs by their white peers, subjected to racial behavior or slurs by their white peers. But when they reported the incidents to the headmaster or the other school staff, their claims were ignored. Their concerns are ignored.
I believe that.
They say racial tension started brewing following the 2014 police killing of Michael Brown and Ferguson.
I believe that too.
The shooting prompted fierce debate online among students, which deteriorated into racial slurs. At one point, a black student was even threatened with lynching. They also claim that white students would walk through the school hall saying nigger without fear of being reprimanded. But when students confronted headmaster Teta with evidence of racial abuse, they say no action was taken. Mm-hmm. They have a video here. Let me see. Noelle gets her hashtag Black at BLS 2016 campaign underway. Let's see what this,
Is recording?
Yeah. All right. Let's get it. Hi, my name is Maggie Noel, and I am president of BLS Black, which stands for Black Leaders Aspiring for Change and Knowledge.
Hi, my name is Kylie Webster Cazot, and I'm an active member of BLS Black, and I'm also captain of the BLS Step Squad.
We are here today
to initiate phase one of our campaign,
hashtag Black at BLS. We are here today to make our...
Listen, these women are already so on point and organized. The top, girls, they're 16, like...
They was like step one. They like, laid the plan down. They was like, nah, bitch, you fuck with the wrong group today.
I mean, once they start speaking in unison and shit, like it's a spoken word poem.
Oh, everybody was in formation.
I know the principal was looking at this shit like, I'm gonna have to resign. This is
right.
These motherfuckers about to get me out of here.
Yep, I'm about to lose my job.
As soon as they were like speaking in at the same time as in unison, it's like
they're like, we black and black is in the name.
Right. Right. We are head of BLACK, which stands for Black Leadership. It's like,
yes! Hold up.
Isn't that we so black, we double the black, nigga.
Yes!
B squared. You about to lose your job. Mm-hmm. Oh wait, hold on. Volume on this thing is terrible.
Yeah, they got that little slide shit.
Yeah, it keeps going to zero.
Administration and everyone that we refuse to be silenced, and we're not afraid to speak up.
We're here to use this campaign to unite our community, to unite the community of black alumni and the students of color at BLS and at schools like it. We're going to use this campaign to emphasize that we are united and we have the desire and the right to be acknowledged and recognized as a united community.
United. Now we got a little call to action for y'all, all right? We want you to blow up every single social media
you got.
Twitter, Facebook,
Snapchat,
Instagram,
your Pinterest, your Tumblr,
your
email, everything.
With the hashtag Black at BLS. All right, now hit him with an example.
Hashtag Black at BLS. When you're the only black student in your AP US history course, and when slavery comes up, they all turn to you.
Hashtag Black at BLS. When people can walk in the hall saying, without fear of being reprimanded.
Hashtag Black at BLS. When your white peers are using Twitter and Facebook to put out racial slurs and negative things about students of color, and you print out the tweets and give them to your headmaster and a binder, and then she does nothing about it. Hashtag Black at BLS.
I think that was over 140 characters, but you get the point. Blow up everything and stay tuned for phase two of our campaign. All right, now remember, stay black,
stay proud,
and keep striving for black excellence.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
That was guaranteed to blow up.
Oh my god, yes.
Because they were young people speaking young people language.
In March, another student, Destiny Warnham, 16, came forward about an incident last October, which she said her English teacher asked her, "What's up, my nigga?" during a discussion at Huckleberry Finn. Oh, we read about that. The teen was left humiliated while her mother, Rosalind Warnham, who was outraged over the treatment of her daughter and met with Teta to demand the teacher in question this be sacked. That statement was culturally incompetence. Rosalind Warnham, 49, said at the time. What was she expecting from making that statement to her in the standard process in addressing the book? The incident, which occurred last October, took place during the class on Mark Twain's classic novel, which uses the racial term frequently. Destiny says her teacher asked her, "What's up, my nigga?" before demanding to know, "How does that make you feel?" "I didn't know what to say," Destiny told the Boston Globe. "She didn't have to direct it to me to make me feel uncomfortable like that." Yeah, I don't understand what that has to do with the lesson.
Not a motherfucking thing.
Yeah, that's not how it was used in the book at all. It's just like, oh, cool, I get to say the N-word today for class. I cannot wait to say this to my black student.
And the how does that make you feel? What the fuck that got to do with anything?
Right, so then she came forward, and of course, nothing was done. So, black people start organizing.
Right.
Investigators
about social media, people can't be ignored no more.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was investigation by the school district's Office of Equity, as well as a separate investigation by the Civil Rights Unit, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they found 7 separate allegations of racial abuse and how staff responded. A school district report found administrators acted correctly in 6, but failed to adequately respond to a student threat to lynch a 15-year-old black classmate. In that case, a white boy allegedly called a black girl a racial slur and threatened to lynch her while holding up an electrical cord. Investigators say Tedder failed to inform the parents of both students. The president of NAACP's Boston chapter said the headmaster should be fired for not having called the police immediately. Tedder said the student was disciplined, but she could not reveal the details as children's school files are confidential. District investigators also looked into an incident with Destiny Warner, where they ruled that the teacher's language was inappropriate, but not grounds for discipline. In May, Noel Webster Kazow, and other members of student activism group BLACK and BLS released a second video complaining that nothing had changed in the school at the school after the investigations. They said that there had been no mention of the Black at BLS campaign by Tedder or other teachers during the school, and claimed that Tedder had also failed to turn up to the lunchtime conversations on race. "The fact that our administration failed to publicly denounce his behavior, even say something to students, making the comments that was effective, has created an unsafe and racially hostile learning environment for the students of color at BLS. Recent graduates Noel and Webster Kazal said in the video, last week the headmaster and her assistant headmaster stood down amid the rising criticism of the handling of the incidents." Well, at least they got them out of there, you know.
Somebody that was going... Well, not all the time, but somebody took the fall for this one. But, you know, sometimes they stick their heels in the mud, but nah, fuck y'all, I ain't retiring.
African-American math teacher Trevor Smith, 29 years old, had little sympathy for his colleagues, saying that if they felt unsupported, now they know how a minority person feels.
Ooh!
Oh, I smile.
Right, because he was like, look, I've been here by myself all the time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, some of the faculty blamed school superintendent Tommy Chang and Boston Mayor Marty Walsh for refusing to defend staff over their dealing of the racial abuse allegations. Assistant Headmaster Flynn, in an angry letter to Chang, admitted the school administration's response was not ideal, but we did good things. Oh, Jesus.
Now you need to go, because you missed the point of why you had to step down.
Right. Boston Latin is first and oldest public school in America and has had famous alumni and stuff, so they talk about that. It is believed this gave, let's see, 20, according to Boston Globe, 23% of students at the school were black 20 years ago. It's believed this gave hundreds of African American teenagers access to a top public school, which in turn gave them a better chance at attending an elite college. However, recent figures show that today only 9% of students are black and 12% are Hispanic, far less than compared to Boston's 2 other exam schools. Yep, well, there you go. 0 to 100, Karen.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna give it 100. I know they stepped down and shit, but I'm gonna give it 100 just because the shit happened so long and y'all ignored them.
I'm gonna give it 0. The headmaster guy quit. The girls and the other black kids at the school organized and they got something done. You know, I hope whoever comes in after this person
will take that shit seriously.
Will now take the allegations of racial abuse seriously and take steps to, you know, to to educate the staff on to get some sensitivity and shit. So,
and I hope
for me personally, I feel like that's a success story. You know, I hate that anybody has to quote unquote step down from their jobs, but at the same time, if you weren't going to do the job, what's the point of having the job?
Right. And also, I hope it makes the staff scared of doing dumb shit.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. The next person. All right, let's go to Guess the Race.
Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time.
That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all of podcast land. We read and play news articles from all over the globe, and we ask our contestants today, the chat room, to guess the race. And the chat room is racist. All right, let's get into the first article. A couple has been charged with assault for throwing pizza rolls at each other. Gastonia, North Carolina.
Oh shit, that's up the street.
North Carolina couple faces charges of allegedly assaulting each other with pizza rolls. Samantha Brooke Knipe, 21, and Brad Scott Beard, 24, guess the race, were each charged on Monday with one count of misdemeanor simple assault. The suspects allegedly got into a fight at their Gastonia apartment and started throwing pizza rolls at each other. A motive in the incident remains uncertain. Beard faces 60 days in jail, and Knipe faces 30 days in jail. It's funny, women always get less time in these kind of things, I think that's just an admission of how shitty men are, that the law's like, there's a lot of good reason to kill a man, come on. Mm-hmm. Half the time at the end of every snap is the same. It's really like, she went to jail, she was convicted of murder in 2010, she'll be eligible for parole in 2012. Update, she out, she already free. Let's be honest, he deserved to die.
I wonder what a hot pockets of them Tony Rose.
Oh yeah, they was probably them Tostinos.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some nuts Tostinos.
Yeah, I could tell.
They were fresh out the oven.
Who's the person that called the police? You know what I mean?
I couldn't imagine that phone call.
Whiter than the writer's room at Orange Is the New Black. Oh, I'm going to guess they were they were cheese pizza rolls. Say white. Little Caesars. Crackers without cheese, white. The correct answer is, and everybody got it, white. And if you guys want to see what they look like, here you go. That hair, man, like she is Harley Quinn or something. But yeah, they look like the kind of people that throw pizza rolls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like the kind of people that throw pizza rolls in a fight, you know. Let's see who else we got here. A Florida mother, 18 years old, has been arrested for using her 6-month-old son to beat her boyfriend.
That baby got hands.
18-year-old woman was arrested after she used her 6-month-old son to beat her boyfriend during a fight. Tatiana Allen of Orange County traveled about 65 miles from her home to celebrate the 4th of July with her boyfriend and their child. Wait, what's funny about traveling 65 miles? I don't get it.
No, because I'm reading about the crime she did. I was like, she went 65 miles with that baby to do that?
No. They were traveling to go celebrate the 4th of July at Daytona Beach, so they left
home. Okay. I thought she left home with that mission. Mm-mm. My bad.
Authorities arrived shortly before 4:30 p.m. and found Allen had battered her boyfriend with the child. The baby was taken to the hospital Monday afternoon, where he's in good condition. Allen was taken into custody on charges of battery and infliction of physical and mental injury on the child. She's being held in Volusia County without bail. It is unclear whether she had an attorney. Yeah, she used her kid to beat her boyfriend like you would use a bat.
Oh.
Yeah, like she was swinging her kid to hit him like a weapon.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So that is, I've heard of people using their children as weapons against the father, but she took it literal.
I guess that baby must have been made of steel.
Guess the race. But how do you, never mind. Okay. That sounds like something. Okay. Where's the guest? Y'all go guess the race. You gonna catch these hands and this baby, Black. Clearly doing a Richard Pryor routine, Black. The correct answer is, no more tears, Black. The correct answer is Black. If you guys want to see what
somebody
she looks
said
like.
Black mamas will beat you with anything.
Let me see if I can show y'all the. Wait, where'd it go? Oh, I have to go down. So, nope. I don't know. Hold on. I don't even know where it went. Oh, did I close it? No, it's right here.
Okay, I thought I seen it scroll down. Ain't it that one or that's another one?
No, that's Skype. It's a Word document. Let me try it one more time. See if it comes up. What's the yams? I don't know. You guys can't see this one, I guess.
I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah, for some reason, I want y'all to be great. Oh, wait. Didn't mean to do that. Give me a second. I'll come back. Let's try a screen share one more time. Yeah, I don't know. It's not wanting to show it no more. At any rate, she was Black, y'all. She was Black, and I'm Black, and I'm Blacker than Black, and I'm Black, y'all. Oh, there we go. All right, here you guys go, if you want to see her. That's what she look like. She's like, I will use this baby to beat your ass.
No, beat the hell out of you.
No, you ain't going to use my baby beat.
She was like, watch me.
Mm-hmm.
It came out of me. I can do what I want to with it.
Sick of your shit.
All of your shit.
I heard of picking out your own switch, but picking out your own kid?
Right.
Damn, that's the next level.
That's brand new to me.
All right, bonus round. Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race. That's right, double the points, double the race, and the bonus round against the race. So far, everybody's all over the place, but let's see if they can continue the hot streak. All right, a man has decided to get married.
Okay.
To his smartphone.
Oh, shit now.
Mm-hmm.
They got an app for that.
He wanted to prove how precious phones have become in our daily lives by marrying his phone. Now, you think he's going to not be able to get the phone pregnant and then upgrade it to a different phone in 18 months?
Of course.
There are plenty of quickie weddings that take place in Las Vegas. Okay. Well, let me see if I can just play the story. You guys can guess his race. His name is Aaron Chervinak, and he's 34 years old in Los Angeles.
With that said, by the power given to me here in the state of Nevada, it is now my honor and my privilege to pronounce you husband and smartphone. Congratulations.
If we're going to be honest with ourselves, we connect with our phones on so many emotional levels. We look to it for solace, to calm us down, to put us to sleep, to ease our minds. And to me, that's also what a relationship is about. So, in a sense, my smartphone has been my longest relationship. That's why I decided to see what it was like to actually marry a phone. So I'm here in Vegas. I've got this plan, and we contacted a local chapel to see if they'd be willing to perform this slightly unorthodox ceremony. And they weren't just open to it. I think they were really excited about the prospect. It's something different. It's something new. And we're going to make our way over to the ceremony very soon. I'm trying to ask the hard questions of myself as to what this relationship means. And I'm trying to go as far as I can to explore that.
Got another
we are
phone
gathered here
ring
today
barrier.
In Las Vegas.
What'd you say, Karen?
Had another phone as a ring barrier. It was. It was on the pillow.
I wonder if he would call the person that brought the phone up there, the cell phone provider.
It's a very exciting and joyous occasion to witness and celebrate the joining of Aaron and his smartphone. Think of all.
I just can't wait for the divorce.
How?
I feel like in the last
phone file for the divorce.
I feel like in the last year we just haven't really had a good connection, and you just keep dropping my calls. There's no excuse not to text back when it is the cell phone, right? Where were you last night? Oh, I ain't have my phone on me. I know, nigga. I'm the phone.
Ah! You know everything is got names now. So mm-hmm. Is it Cortana? Is it Siri? What's the phone's name?
Right.
All of the love and laughter you have shared, all of the good times you've had, all the reasons you're here today at this office.
Yo, people went to this?
Yes,
what?
They did.
I mean, that's not a lot of people, but the fact that there's like four people that had nothing to do is sad as fuck to me. It's sadder than marrying the phone.
Ah!
I feel bad for the dude that got his license as a preacher just to be able to do this, and this is what his life came to. I know he thought he was going to be making so many people happy getting them married in Las Vegas, and nope.
No, he can't. He came on his ship and go, okay, who's next? A man and his phone. What?
And you know what? Fuck
it. Is the woman named phone? No. His real cell phone, dog. Right. He was like, hey, I get paid regardless.
I do anything for money. I need, the crack ain't gonna smoke itself.
Mm-mm.
I bet it's like, if anyone has anything to say right now, speak now or forever hold your peace. Oh shit. Oh shit. Her ex is here. Oh, the cell phone's ex is here.
Altar, pledging your eternal love and commitment to each other. Now, do you, Aaron, take this smartphone to be your lawfully wedded wife?
I do.
And do you also promise to love her, honor her, comfort and keep her, and be faithful to her?
I do.
How do you know it's her? I like that he's open-minded enough to marry a phone, but has to assign it a gender. You know what I mean? Cause I ain't no gay phone operator, nigga. Shit. Think I'm gonna get gay with my phone? Nah. When I masturbate on my phone, that's a woman.
Do the phones have to fight for equal rights to be married?
I fight for custody. I feel bad for all the Republicans that feel like they were right now.
What are they, children? Gigabytes?
I told you. Didn't I tell you? If you let them marry each other, same sex, they're going to be marrying phones. I was right.
Oh, yeah. Somebody justified me.
Yep. My bad, bigots. Y'all had it.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to go this far. I really, when I joined the marriage equality bandwagon, I really didn't think they would continue and trickle down to phones.
You're still a bigot, but I think you're right.
Yeah, you're still a bigot, but you had a point. Your slippery slope stands.
If you will, I'm going to ask you to place the ring on your bride's finger and your finger. And repeat after me, please. With this ring.
With this ring.
I thee wed.
I thee wed.
I promise to love you.
By the way, the ring is actually a back of a case, so it just slides right onto his hand so that he's looking at the phone.
So it's only one ring, so it saved money.
So guess the race chat room. We've had enough of the tomfoolery going on with this person. Did you already ask him or no?
Yeah, for some reason when I try to put it in there, it thinks it's a dupe.
Duplicate. Okay, yeah. Let me see what they say. We don't have a connection anymore. This signal is weaker than it once was. We need a new plan. I am a white man. White nonsense. Going to get his smartphone to reluctantly agree to an open relationship in a few months. White.
Oh.
I think we should try different providers. I want to go back to Verizon. I'm sorry.
So it's going from like an iPhone to an Android. Is that like switching
races? I don't
right,
know.
Right. Nationalities.
Also, protest votes to leave the EU in order to prove a point. White.
Oh.
Likes a mayonnaise sandwich. Like a mayonnaise sandwich. This some white folk shit. Arranged an open phone marriage so he could still, hold on. Now it's moving too fast. Where did this go? Arranged an open phone marriage so he could still kiss his dog on the side.
Oh.
As white as the jizz covering the screen of that smartphone. White. They never would marry a track phone though. The correct answer is white. Everyone got it. And if you guys want to see what he looks like, he looks probably like your thing, like a bad Kenny G impersonator. That's him right there, y'all. Oh my god. He's like, this would be a good idea to show people how much we dedicate to our, I hope the phone take half.
Wait a minute, do it again. It didn't show up on my
screen. It didn't show up?
Yeah, I mean, it was loading and you moved it before it finished.
Oh, hold on. Let me go.
It might have just been me, my bad.
Did everybody else see it?
Yeah, somebody said it looked like a sad Jesus, so apparently.
Yeah, so everybody saw it. Okay.
It was just me, my bad, y'all.
No, no problem. Let's go to Sword Ratchetness, so we can get up out of here on this late night edition. Well rested version of the Blackout Tips. Did we do this one yesterday? A sword wielding man barricades himself in a cutlery shop in Little Tokyo. A man armed with a samurai sword barricaded himself inside of a cutlery store, forcing a lockdown at Japanese Village Plaza in Little Tokyo on Sunday.
Yeah, they said yes.
Okay, all right. I'm about to say, I feel like this feels familiar, but you know what these sword motherfuckers,
everybody sound the same.
Yeah, all right, let's see. How about, oh, I see why, because it didn't let me delete it last time. There we go.
Okay, this makes sense now.
A man in his 30s was attacked with a samurai sword in Maldon Street. So I guess he was just walking down the street minding his own fucking business. Mm-hmm. When somebody with a sword decided to make his business they business.
Ah! Whether they wanted to or not.
To give him the business.
That sword.
The incident took place at 10:45 p.m. on a Thursday, June 16. The man received facial fractures and was taken to the hospital for treatment. A police spokeswoman said police are investigating the assault of a man. It happened at 10:45 on Thursday. The suspects were reported to be in possession of a samurai sword, which meant armed officers conducted an area search, but no one was found. Disappeared like a ninja. Mm-hmm. Those Japanese flutes in the background and shit.
Yes.
Smoke pellet. All right.
The C chord.
Tomorrow's show will have Janelle James. So join us live on Crowdcast, which will be at 8:30, I believe. Also, premium people in the morning. Justin and I will be recording Ballsy Sports and the pregame and all that stuff on Crowdcast. I'm looking for a way to email everybody using their email accounts they have on the blackouttips.com. For premium members, and if not, if that fails, what I'll do is I'll make a post on the blackouttips.com and embed the video, but it'll just be for premium people. So mm-hmm. If you're not premium, you won't be able to see it. Mm-mm. So we'll figure it out in the morning, but until then, I love you.
I love you too.
Mwah.